How does one team, let alone three and four teams, miss out on Luka Doncic? I mean, the kid was a freaking MVP of the EuroLeague at 19 years old, and we still overthought it. And that's what NBA front offices give to you. And we'll start with there with Chris Manning. He joins us, of course, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Chris, editor-in-chief of Fear the Sword and Locked On Cavs pod host as well. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining me. Let's start with Luka Doncic. Was it as fun to watch him up close last night as it was for me on the couch out in Geauga County?
It exceeded all of my expectations, to be honest. He's so smooth. He's so poised. That crazy step back he has, it looks even like more unguardable in person. And Just the stuff he does. To me, my big takeaway from that game was really just that's what a transitional. Like incredible young player looks like, and that's what it like does to a franchise and how much life it gives you. And they might have two now, and like it just is like, oh right, the Cavs don't have that anymore. He's incredible. It was really cool also just to see the large Slovenian population in Cleveland cheer him on so much. It was just a really cool night, and he's just freaking incredible. There's no words that can like do him justice, because I think it's just like the hype is so real with him.
No, and you watch, I remember Ryan Russillo compared him to James Harden, to a slower James Harden, and I'm going, I can kind of see it. You know, you can sort of see with some of the playmaking stuff. And now this year, Harden's step back three is so unguardable and untouchable, and he's scoring so many points with that specific shot alone. And then last night, Luka, especially in the first quarter, you know, it feels like Harden step back three, but maybe in like 0.85 speed. It's just a little bit slower, but certainly it's still a deadly, deadly shot. And like you said, I think smooth is the best way to kind of describe his game. It was fun watching him last night, and it's mind-blowing that so many teams, and we're only talking about a handful here, but it's mind-blowing to me that he wouldn't have been the top pick in the draft last year. I feel like a whole lot of really smart people said all year long he needs to be the top pick in the draft, and then a couple front offices, Phoenix included, they just sort of overthought it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the coach of the Suns now is actually Luka's international coach.
Right.
For Slovenia, so it's like there's that connection there as well. And, like, I get why they took Aiden, and I think he's actually been pretty good. And, like, I think Trae Young's going to be awesome. But, like, it's going to look like one of those things, like, people overthought the fact that Luka Doncic is just incredible and, like, will definitely be the best player in this class.
Chris Manning with me from Fear the Sword. Okay, so you mentioned that's what, you know, a transformational young player looks like, and now the Mavericks, you know, you get a guy like that in, and then it just sort of changes your perception and your outlook altogether. All of a sudden, they're in the mix for Kristaps Porzingis within, you know, I think there were rumors that the deal was actually floated the night before, but within about 3 hours in terms of NBA world, Porzingis was complaining to the Knicks that he wanted out, and then he was a Dallas Maverick. It happened very, very quickly. Give me some hope, Chris, for the Cavaliers, and I don't know if it's Jetty, and I'm pretty sure right now the hope is not Colin Sexton, although certainly the book has not been written on that. Moving forward, what do the Cavs have to sort of wrap their heads around and kind of hang their hat on? Jetty was looking really good there for a couple games, and then he sprained his ankle, unfortunately, in the first half last night. How can the Cavs land a guy like Luka, and what is the absolute ceiling with Jetty, just based on what you've seen so far and kind of the way he was trending these last couple games?
So Jetty, obviously his numbers are a little bit higher than he probably would be over the course of full season. He was like shooting like 47% from three going into last night's game. Over his last five games, he's been awesome. I think the comp that I like based on some of the analytical profiles I've seen of him is like maybe a poor man's Tayshaun Prince. He's a little bit more slender than Tayshaun.
Okay.
Maybe I don't love the idea of him defending fours down the line, although he's done it a lot this year. But I think if he could be that with a little more flair to his game, that would be like if everything just works out for him, maybe something that could work. And that's a really useful player. For the Cavs to get that young guy, I think they have to get really lucky come lottery time, right? Like, I mean, the lottery odds changing doesn't help them, and we don't, you know, there seems like Zion is the one guy in that draft class that's going to be that foundational player that you just know for sure he's going to change everything for your franchise, but I think it has to be that. But if they don't get Zion, I think a good plan B or 1A or A1 or whatever would be like, okay, you bring back Kevin Love and you try to do something where you mesh these two realities where you maybe get a Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech or you get Barrett or Cam Reddish or whoever you like that's not Zion, and you say, Jetty, We're going to bring you back. We're going to keep developing Colin. Hopefully a summer in the weight room and on the court will help him. And then you bring back Kevin, make Kevin the hub, lean on Kevin while you still can. And then you just try to let those young guys mesh into something else around a guy like Kevin Love, and then you have Tristan and Larry, and you bring back David Nwaba, and you make some other smart signings, and that's how you build. I think that's probably the more sustainable model, but if they get Zion, you take Zion, and you don't think about it. But I think the more sustainable, interesting model for me to see if they could follow would be something that isn't just relying on one guy. But if you get the one guy, you take him, and you don't think about it.
Yeah, no, and I guess – I kind of like that idea, Chris, because it feels like it's more likely. I mean, I really don't expect Kevin Love to be dealt. And the idea that you're going to get Zion, I mean, as we know, the odds aren't quite what they were. I like the idea of at least them being prepared for something like that, kind of piecemealing it together and trying to build around a Culver or a Barrett or a Reddish. Do you have any favorites? I'm not sure how much scouting you've done so far. You do a great job covering the Cavs, the 2018-2019 Cavs, and Lord knows what the 2019-20 Cavs will look like. But I'm sure you watched a couple Duke games, and you mentioned Jared Culver, very interesting player. He struggled for Texas Tech against Kansas yesterday, but the whole team did. Who do you like anybody non-Zion as far as the draft goes?
I like Barrett. What I've done this year, whereas the last couple years I haven't watched much college, I've tried to watch a couple games a week,
yeah,
just so I like have a baseline familiarity. I like Barrett. I think he would be number two. I really do like Culver, too. I like the versatility. I like the idea that he could kind of develop into like a better version of what Jetty maybe profiles as and could have some more skill. There would really, I think, fit well around Kevin Love if they bring him back as sort of the hub of the offense. And defensively, that guy is already playing in a pro-level scheme. They're playing an NBA-type defense in Texas Tech. So like he would come in and be maybe good defensively. You go further down the board, I really like DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. Mm. I do think if I was the Cavs, if you don't love someone at three, let's say, because I think Barrett would, you kind of have to take him at two, but if you get to three, four, five in that range, and you don't love the guys you get, and maybe the Atlanta Hawks do, and you could get two picks out of it and trade back and just take a couple guys that you like, if you don't love someone at three, I would do that because I think this team does need a lot of talent, and unless it is Zion, and maybe Barrett, I don't know if any of these guys are going to be that. So I would honestly see if you could get more guys out of this draft and just not settle for that one pick if possible.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. I mean, I love Reddish. I mean, I just have this sort of infatuation with his jumper and his offensive, his ability once he's featured more. I mean, I don't know if we're getting the full picture because he's playing with Barrett and Williamson. But I like the idea if you're sitting there at three, you know, maybe you even – here's what they do. They need young talent. They also need assets and flexibility. So maybe you can add a pick from a future draft and bounce back and pick up a couple players. I like that outlook, certainly. Chris Manning joining me from Fear the Sword and Locked On Cavs podcast. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at CWM. Writes Chris, the trade deadline coming up, Alec Burks and Rodney Hood. I think a lot of people, I would expect them to be dealt. Do you expect anybody else to be dealt? What's the likelihood that Love is on the move, even though we haven't seen him since, what, the first handful of games of the season? Do you expect a busy trade deadline for the Cavaliers?
I expect a busy deadline, but I just don't know what it all the way looks like. I think, you know, I would be flabbergasted if Kevin Love got traded just
Same.
Because he hasn't played in months, right? Like, I mean, we're just a while away from him playing basketball, and I just can't imagine a team is going to want to acquire that guy without having him play the game. I think Alec Burks is the obvious guy to get dealt. Rodney Hood's interesting because he can veto any trade because he's on that qualifying offer. And would he just does he want to go through what he went through last year? That's a fair question. The name that I really sort of wonder about is just John Henson get flipped at all again, because they could trade him again as a result of, you know, in the Delly trade. Do they trade him to eat a worse contract? He doesn't have a fit for me on this Cavs roster even next year. I just don't know what the purpose of John Henson really is for them. And, you know, do they buy him out? Do they flip him at the deadline? But I think the Cavs have to be active. I think they are a team that can rent their cap space out for teams that are trying to get off bad contracts. That Burks chip is just too good to not use, because it's going to help a team that has signed someone to a bad contract get out of it. And the Cavs shouldn't be in a rush to spend money. So I feel for them as human beings as having to move in the middle of the season, and in Burke's case, you know, be twice this year. But I think he has to get dealt, in the Hood to me would make a lot of sense. Well, if he is comfortable getting dealt,
I'm sure Burks is renting anyways. He'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you this: if you go back in hindsight, I mean, it's hard to call the Kyrie deal anything but a disaster, although I, and I'm sure a lot of other people, liked it at the time. I mean, you're looking at it going, okay, with Isaiah, once we get him healthy, and Jay Crowder, you know, maybe they'll be able to make a little bit of a push right now, and you're also preparing potentially for life without LeBron. Obviously, one of the big miscalculations there was that Brooklyn was better than a lot of people expected them to be. But I really feel like, especially over the course of this year and maybe going back to the summer, whether or not the organizational mandate was to try to make the playoffs, I feel like Kobe Altman has kind of settled in and has made some good moves and has accepted the fact that, you know, they probably need to be a bottom 10 team these next two seasons in order to protect the pick and keep the picks, obviously, from the Korver deal. I love the move he made with Milwaukee. Do you feel like Kobe Altman's kind of coming into his own as general manager?
I do. I think Kobe has done the right stuff since, especially since Kevin went down. I think without Kevin Love, even with how well Tristan Thompson was playing and everything, there was no way you were going to make the playoffs without Kevin Love, especially with how bad the defense has looked and everything like that. So I think he's made the right moves. I think the deadline and the summer will be sort of the big telling points for me. You know, does he... What they do in the summer with a guy like Nwaba, with, you know, with theoretically Hood or Burks if they're still on the roster, with Kevin Love and with the draft and what kind of signings they do make will sort of tell us more. I would hope that this isn't just a one-year patience move, that they aren't going to try and rush it. I think we learned the last time when they signed Earl Clark and then traded for Luol Deng and Spencer Hawes and did all that and signed Jarrett Jack that summer, and they had to, like, give away assets to get rid of it to clear room for LeBron. I think you can't rush it. I think you need to take it slow, be patient, and in time, if it works out, it works out. But I don't think they can rush it, and I hope that's the lesson Kobe Altman took from that last experience, and I think it has to be his mindset. And so far, that's definitely been the case. But I'm curious to see what he does Thursday, and I'm curious to see what he does in the summer. I think you know that what he does with the coaching hire, what he does with free agency, will tell us a lot about Kobe.
Chris, I'll get you out of here on this. A wild week around the association: Porzingis, Davis, Kyrie, LeBron, Rich Paul. You know, some could argue that the NBA has a superstar problem or a trade demand problem. Let me just ask you this. Do you think the NBA is bothered by the way the last week has gone? And do you think they could do more to try to keep some superstars in their market? It's one thing when Anthony Davis asks out of New Orleans, but not long after, you had a guy asking out of New York. And so to me, it's not a big market, small market thing. It's how competent is your front office type of thing. But how do you just sort of view from 30,000 feet the way the last week has gone, the last week or two has gone as far as the league goes?
Well, number one, it's more entertaining when you're not having to sort through all of it, because, like, when you don't have LeBron, you just don't have that as much, so it is funnier to watch it from afar. I will say that, as opposed to having to write about it and talk about
right.
it. I think they got to feel crappy for New Orleans. They think, you know, you get worried a little bit about Giannis and Milwaukee now, because we will be having, theoretically, this conversation about Giannis in a year from now. And that's an organization that's really done everything right with Giannis in signing guys and drafting well and getting Budenholzer in there. But, I mean, I think they'd certainly prefer to have, you know, guys in these different markets and keep them there. But it also is entertaining, and I think there is something to that, to the big market stuff. And, you know, you have teams like Utah. The Cavs were there for a little bit, obviously, with LeBron. But teams in more low-wattage cities, for lack of a better word, getting that. I mean, Dallas isn't historically like a big market in that they have Luka and they have Kristaps now. That's a must-watch team going forward. So I think we have to kind of see where Anthony Davis ends up, how it does play out. But and you're not going to stop guys from talking and tampering. I mean, that's just sort of the reality. You know, that's just the world we live in when they all know each other. So
sure.
It's tough, but it is at least entertaining, and that's probably not a bad thing for the NBA.
Chris Manning, make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's at @CWMWrights. Does an outstanding job, editor-in-chief of Fear the Sword and host of the Locked On Cavs podcast. Chris, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword. And, of course, he joined us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.